I'm Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen.
To win a new Jeep at Grayton Resort and Casino's Holly Jolly Jeep Giveaway. Win a 2017 Jeep Wrangler or your share of $50,000 cash. Drawings Friday, December 2nd, 9th, 16th, and 23rd. One Jeep winner and 50 cash winners every Friday, guaranteed. Win a new Jeep Wrangler with Grayton Resort and Casino's Holly Jolly Jeep Giveaway. Complete rules available at the Reward Center.
There's no place I'd rather be.
I'm sorry, I stepped on the ad for the Grayton Casino, John.
You better be careful because, you know, they pay all the bills here.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, John.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Well, look at this book I'm holding up. Have you ever seen a book like this before?
I've never seen a book presented the way it's presented, and graphically, I've never seen a book like that before.
It was written by Ali Bazzari. Ali Bazzari, the book is called Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. His last name is spelled Bouzzari. And thank you for coming into the show this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your... We were talking before the show a little bit about your journey, how you got here, and your company, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah. I like cooking and I like science. End of journey. it's been this really fun lesson in, you know, there's all this talk about the millennial way of finding a career, of wandering aimlessly about until you like freelance your way to whatever you need to make rent. I think a more standardized version of that could be if you have a day job or if you have the straight and narrow path, like I was really into science. I did my undergrad in biochemistry at UT, which is University of Texas for people outside of Texas. Mm-hmm. The thing that normally, according to like the old paradigm, I would have kept as my passion or, you know, hobby after work was food. And I think the way you make the whole millennial dream a reality is just mash those two things together and see if there's more breathing room in the overlap in the Venn diagram than trying to be the best at either of those two things. I'm never going to win a James Beard Award, and I'm never going to win a Nobel Prize. But if I try to push those two circles together, maybe just because there's less competition, I can do better things.
So you went on the academic path and undergraduate in biochemistry.
Yep.
Oh, that was the first time.
I tried to double major in biochemistry and jazz drum set performance, but the College of Natural Sciences, that I think broke their brains. They said no.
They frowned on that.
They said no. And so I decided I can learn drums on the streets, but it's hard to like learn back alley biochemistry.
And so with the degree, what was your life course at that point?
I was doing the college thing where it was just I found that I was good at chemistry and I liked how it explained how rainbows work and how a football, you know, why it's made of the material that it's made of. I loved that alphabet for the universe. Mm-hmm. I really liked food and I was cooking. I was actually cooking in restaurants and for catering companies and stuff as my side job. And it slowly dawned on me that you could do those two things together. But for a really long time, I was just bouncing between everything that somebody interested in science could want to do. I wanted to do marine biology. There was a point where I'm still very into music, but I really wanted to take this understanding of biochem and try to, launch my own drum line where I wanted to focus more on material science and start looking at the physics of how you could make the shells for drums and, figure that out. So I think I was poking and prodding at different facets of it, trying to find the right crevice to get mm-hmm. some purchase. And that I think the thing that just was the aha moment is when I started thinking about food as the lens through which I could push all this science stuff.
So you have a company.
I have a company.
R&D company, I guess.
Yes,
is what you call it.
It's called Pilot Research mm-hmm. and Development. Mm-hmm. The name is this hilarious, you know, quintuple entendre. It's like a pilot light to start your stove. It's like a pilot study where, you know, you're trying things out for the first time. It's like we are pilots trying to shepherd people in a direction in the food world and so on and so forth. But yeah, we're based in Sonoma County. We're based in Healdsburg, We have a test kitchen up here, and it's me and I have three partners, Dan Felder, Kyle Connaughton, and Dana Peck. Dan and Kyle, we will get more into what I was doing before later, but Dan and Kyle had sort of mirrored, we were mirroring each other in what we were doing. Kyle at one point was leading R&D for the Fat Duck in the UK, doing really, really amazing, innovative things with food. And Dan was doing the same for the Momofuku restaurant group. And Dan came over here to do that for Saison for a little bit down in SF. And I was working with the Thomas Keller restaurant group and doing sort of freelance consulting with everybody from Bennu in the city to 11 Madison Park in New York.
So let me just, I don't mean to interrupt, but give us an example of, so somebody like Corey from Bennu, what does he ask you to do?
So this is Corey Lee, the chef owner of Bennu in San Francisco.
Brilliant and very, very fearless person in terms of, I think a lot of times chef's greatest fear can be not knowing something. So he was fearless in that way. Cause he was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know it. I'm also happen to be Corey Lee. So I'm not going to be caught up in not knowing exactly how this everything works. So, he would say, hey, we've been working on, a sprouted grain bread. We really, really like, the complexity of, you get like a lot of savoriness from the grains, being sprouted before being made into bread, but we're having problems getting it to be as airy and light and refined as you would expect it to be alongside all of our food. So what can we do to rein it in and to refine it and smooth off the edges of the way this bread looks and the way it feels and make it more reproducible and keep it from going every which way every time we make it? And so we would sit down and we would look at it. A lot of times I would draw stuff very, very poorly on a piece of paper to try to explain the fundamental thing that was happening. Like, all right, when you sprout grains, they wake up and they start digesting themselves. So you take flavorless proteins and you turn them into umami and sweetness and they start browning better in the oven and all these things. So we'd explain the ground rules and then we'd go into practice. And the key part about going into the practice side of things was understanding that human beings who are usually going to be really under the gun at a restaurant like that are going to have to execute whatever we come up with. So the 37-step sprouted grain bread that requires a centrifuge and support from, you know, the Marines, it was not ever a thing. And that was a problem with, you know, there's a lot of scientists who have started talking with chefs, and some chefs have become disenchanted because the royal we of scientists, if we're too high up in the ivory tower, it's really hard to be relevant to people cooking food because there's a lot of uncontrollable, very unscientific stuff that is inextricably bound to the act of cooking food.
So can I ask you, what do you think about molecular gastronomy? It's science. It's pretty interesting, I think.
I don't think it is science. I think it's a science-y looking. I think the whole molecular gastronomy thing was, purposefully, was an aesthetic. It was, let's present stuff in petri dishes. Let's tell people let's specify the degree to which we cooked the egg. Let's put 62 degree egg on a menu. That is molecular gastronomy. I don't think anything to do with what I do, or with science in the kitchen, was what people really, really understood molecular gastronomy to be. And I think that leads into a lot of what we do at Pilot, where whether we're developing a dish for Single Thread or we're working with a tech company in San Francisco who's trying to do amazing things with food, or we're just helping somebody make a great snack food, the science is the same. And I mean that very, very sincerely. The science of browning doesn't care whether you're trying to roast a chicken or you're trying to, execute some 37-step centrifuge required recipe. And that was something that has taken the industry a little while to get used to. But the whole science has to be apparent to the diner thing was a bit of an unfortunate trend that thankfully we've evolved past, and it's more of a choice now. that chefs can make, just the same as, you know, when they're picking out stemware.
At that point, we'll take our break. Ali Bouzari is our guest in the K.S. Ardal Kitchen today. His last name is spelled B-O-U-Z-A-R-I. The book is Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. Ali serves as chief science officer and founder of Pilot RD. Chef John Ash, Steve Garner in the K.S. Ardal Kitchen. We will dive into this most unique book when we return.
Coast to coast, late night, all night, on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Call Western Tree.
Do you currently work in the tree service industry? Do you have the skill and the drive to be successful? Do you have no opportunities for advancement? Is your pay just okay? Do you need benefits? If you answer yes to any of these questions, it's time to give Western Tree a call. Western Tree pays top wages to their employees. You can compare your old pay stub to the new one, and you can see the difference. Western Tree works all year long. Western Tree is currently hiring skilled tree climbers to groundsmen, sales, estimators, truck drivers, equipment operators, and laborers. Western Tree has a competitive wage and benefits for all permanent full-time employees. And the company is Diamond certified, so you know it's a leader in its field. Plus, you may even qualify for a signing bonus for some skilled permanent full-time positions. To set up an interview, call
707-235-7884. Yeah!
You've heard about reverse mortgages 100 times on TV, but have you ever heard the whole story? Hi, I'm David Carter, NMLS ID 540322. I've been in the mortgage industry for 12 years, and I specialize in reverse mortgages. If you're 62 or older and you own your home, let's talk. Simply tell me your needs and goals, and I can explain how this great financial tool works. Call me at 707-235-8786 for an appointment. Santa Rosa is my home, and this is where I've guided people like you through the process for 12 years. There's no obligation, so call 707-235-8786 to learn more.
Reverse Mortgage Funding LLC is an equal housing lender. 1455 Broad Street, Bloomfield, New Jersey, 07003. NMLS 1019941. Full licensing at nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Not available to Hawaii and New York residents. Terms and conditions apply. Reverse mortgages are first mortgages. A reverse mortgage is a home secured debt payable upon default or maturity event. Call 973-842-2448 or 888-494-0882. Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Loans made or arranged pursuant to a California Finance Lender's Law license.
This is Lawrence Amaturo, owner of News Talk KSRO, with good news from our community. From the upside, here's Steve Jackson.
Congratulations to David Cotting and Melissa Williams on another great summer of free live concerts at Montgomery Village. Tribute bands representing the Beatles, the Stones, Elton John, Jimmy Buffett, and even Frank Sinatra. Plus dozens more provided free live music every weekend and many Thursdays. But the big winners were local nonprofits who received almost $100,000 in donations. Thanks to Montgomery Village and their concert sponsors, Rodney Strong, Corbell, and Eagle Distributing. An 8-year total of nearly $500,000 has been raised for local nonprofits. Thanks to Montgomery Village.
Why not share your good news with me? My email is lawrence@mysonomamedia.com.
News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Ali Bouzari is our guest in the KSRO Kitchen today. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. His last name is spelled B-O-U-Z-A-R-I. The new book just out the past month or so is called Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. Ali is the chief science officer and co-founder of Pilot RD and consults for restaurants and the Culinary Institute of America on scientifically based cooking. And the hardback book is like one we have not ever seen before. Mm-hmm. You did a doctorate, is that correct, after your undergraduate?
I have a PhD in mashed potatoes.
And explain what that is.
So my degree is actually in food biochemistry. I did it at UC Davis. They have amazing food science and also wine and brewing. They have some really, really great food-centric programs. It's basically applying all of the biochemistry and microbiology and physics and everything that I was studying as an undergrad, but now applying it to food. And the mashed potatoes thing is, for any PhD in that field, you have to really, really drill down into one specific area. The idea is you have to contribute to the canon of stuff we know about the natural world. You can only do that in like 4 years if you pick a very, very narrow idea. And my very, very narrow idea was, hey, there's this revolution going on with sous vide cooking. And it's this amazing thing that's supposed to give us ultimate control in the kitchen. Whatever. The only thing we'd used it for up until then was to cook medium rare steak better. You know, in theory, better. There was so much you could do with it, but it had only really been conceptualized in applications for meat and dairy and maybe eggs. And so I was like, what can we do with vegetables? What can we do with plants? Because plants are so much more interesting biochemically than meat. The different like palette that you have to paint with, looking at a persimmon or a strawberry, is so much broader than what a really, really good chicken breast can afford. I will eat them both, but in terms of stuff to study and levers to pull, vegetables were more interesting, and I wanted to pick one that made a lot of sense. So I looked at root vegetable texture. So I was looking at onions and sweet potatoes and potatoes and stuff, sous vide, and seeing if I could use this very culinary technique to drill into figuring out exactly why definitively mashed potatoes get gummy or lumpy.
So for those who don't know what sous vide is, can you give us a quick primer?
Sous vide is this thing that has gotten a lot of attention as this new way to cook. It's automated and all this stuff. All it is just taking food and putting it into a tank of water that's been heated to a very, very precise temperature. And the main revolution of that is that finally you know actually what temperature you're cooking your food at. Because normally when you set your oven to 350 and you put a chicken in there, who knows what the actual temperature in there is? And this is a way to take some of that guesswork out so that you can get more consistent results.
And so can you tell us what the breakthrough moment where they said, here's your PhD because you've blown our mind. What did you tell your professors?
The breakthrough moment happened 6 weeks in. It was great. I got to go collaborate with some of my colleagues at the French Laundry just on idea farming and seeing how people at the tippy top of the industry were handling mashed potatoes at as high of a level as you possibly could. And the lessons that I learned from them were taken a lot of from what Joel Robuchon was doing, really, really old school French chef with potato puree. And it was crazy. We got down to the bottom of it after, honestly, about 6 weeks of here's the things that water is doing. Here's why you should peel the potatoes afterwards. Here's why this temperature range is great. Here's how you make all there. Here's how you have your buffet of different textures you can create. The next 4 years, we're beating that dead horse to prove to academia that what I was 95% sure was happening. Now I'm 99.999% sure. And so there's something that, I mean, that's a thing.
Has this application been available to mashed potato cooking chefs that they can access this information to improve their mashed potatoes?
I've gone on a nationwide tour this Thanksgiving for all of my family members to show them how things happen. It's a really straightforward technique.
Isn't it just lots of butter and lots of cream?
Lots of butter, lots of cream. and a little bit of thought. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But a little bit of thought of how the way that you're cooking it, when it's hot, when it's not, you know, there's some little nuances to it, but yeah, it was really more of a way to say, here's a food that for a long time, the world of food science has ignored because it's really, really easy to study a Dorito. It's really, really hard to study something a little bit more living and breathing, like actual cooking. And it was as much an exercise in me trying to get a PhD as saying, hey, we can also study cooking rather than just what's called quote unquote food processing. But yeah,
it's just a remarkable story. Well, you mentioned the Dorito in your book somewhere, didn't you?
Oh yeah. I have a photo, really, really beautiful high res, photo of a Dorito opposite a 80-pound dry aged ribeye or $80 a pound.
What were you illuminating in that particular chapter?
Savory is savory. It doesn't matter your price point.
A Dorito or a dry aged ribeye.
You break proteins down. It's a universal thing. It doesn't care if You're a eighth generation Japanese miso maker, or you're the crazy, insane person who created Doritos.
So the book, it's like no other book that we've ever seen, how it's laid out. What was your mission writing the book? What would you hope to accomplish?
The soundbite version is, I want to give people X-ray vision. Honestly and truly, it was this thing, you know, even when I first started teaching at CIA, I went around and introduced myself to all the other chef instructors on the first day. About half of them said, oh yeah, that's cool. Great. Thanks for teaching those classes, but that's not the way I cook. I break down whole animals. I just feel things, and I'm all about the ingredients, and I'm all about flavor. And I couldn't say this at the time because I was like 28 years younger than everybody, but my internal monologue was, well, yeah, guy, but everything that we cook, whether we choose to listen to it or not, is telling us things, and it's all governed by these principles. And the purpose of the book was to bring those principles to even the people who refuse to do anything but cook from the wrist. I since Labor Day, I've been to 65 different restaurants around the country to teach the book as a visual workshop. And that's everybody from 3 Michelin star restaurants to barbecue joints in Central Texas and bakeries. And the premise that I've been trying to communicate is that if I've done my job correctly in this book, you can read it cover to cover in like 4 days because it's mostly pictures. And it's not meant to give you equations and stuff to memorize. It's meant to give you, you know, those reflexes that you have, anybody in a kitchen, when you put something in a pan and you hear it sizzle, you put onions in a saute pan, you hear onions sizzling and crackling. There's a hiss. I mean, everybody can imagine that hiss of onions cooking in a pan. Chef, have you heard the difference? And obviously you have, of when onions change from hiss to crackle. Mm-hmm. If you're standing across the kitchen and you hear that change, what's your first reaction?
Get over there,
right? Yeah. Something's going on. Yeah. So you get over there and you shake the pan.
Yeah.
What's happening in your head is you're zipping through these like 13 conclusions. You're saying, all right, it's stopped hissing. That means there's no more water. There's no more water. It's driving the temperature up. The temperature is going up. It's going to start to get crispy, which maybe is what I want. So maybe it's done. Maybe it's going to start to brown. Maybe it's going to start to burn. Zero people on the planet actually think that. Yeah, they actually go through those steps. It's just instinctual. You see toast start to burn, you respond. What I wanted to do was I wanted to get people thinking almost subconsciously. I wanted to take that gut instinct that we have in the kitchen of smelling something and having a response and touching something and having a response. And I wanted to overlay like smartphone GPS onto that gut instinct so that you don't have to pull out of the flow and stop to say, well, according to the teachings of Julia Child, blah, 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 on page 70, it's meant to be cook in your flow state and cook the way you want to cook. But just have a little bit, have cartoon images running through your head of how it all works.
You know, in the beginning of the book, you made there was a comment which I thought was interesting, because then as I read the book, I thought, well, I don't know whether this is true. And you said, this is not a book about science. Mm-hmm. It's a book about cooking. Mm-hmm. But there's an awful lot of science here.
There's an awful lot of science. I purposefully left the word science out of the title. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a amazing battle that I had with the publisher of whether or not that should be there. Think about the way that we learn cooking anywhere. I mean, if you're watching a Food Network show or you're going to do a cooking class or you're just reading a book, there is already a paradigm of here's a chef, here's an expert who's going to tell us how something works. Like no chef is just like you mix the cold roux into the hot liquid or the hot roux and the cold liquid and then just say that and move on. They're always going to have some rationalization for why that's happening. Sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes it makes no sense. I mean, sometimes it's completely right. But the paradigm's already there. When we learn how to cook, we already expect this is what you do and this is why. Mm-hmm. My whole thesis is that I have tried to present the why in a very accurate, very visual way, and only going down into the science and stopping exactly at the level where it no longer is helping you actually cook. And so when I did my PhD, I'm talking about just the first 6 weeks. For 4 years after that first 6 weeks, I did nothing to advance how people in the world cook mashed potatoes. I complicated the issue. I think the world would cook worse mashed potatoes after those next 4 years. The first 6 weeks is the mantra of how this book is, of just understand the street fighting level.
where at the bottom of the hour, you write in the book that it's presented as getting to know eight characters, and we're going to get into the eight characters after the break at the bottom, in a story rather than managing a bunch of facts and figures. You want to tell a story about each of these characters. Each ingredient stars in its own chapter. You write it's a crash course in how food works, not just recipes. Ali Bazzari is the mastermind behind the new book, Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, in the KS Hardo Kitchen.
Hey, Sonoma County, I'm Stephen Curry, and this is the home of Golden State Warriors play-by-play, 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO.
This is Lawrence Amaturo, owner of News Talk KSRO, with good news from our community. From the upside, here's Steve Jackson.
In a time of so much violence here and abroad, it's encouraging and gratifying to know that we're doing something to make the world safer. Through Community Matters programs and services, more young people every day are speaking up and intervening when they encounter their peers bullying, cyberbullying, or harassing others. Community Matters is locally based in Sonoma County, and founder Rick Phillips is working hard to empower more young people in and out of schools to create a social revolution where it's no longer cool to be cruel. KSRO and the Amaturo Sonoma Media Group wants to acknowledge the great work done by Sonoma's Community Matters and thank founder Rick Phillips for creating a safe place for kids.
Since 1982, Jackson Family Wines has put the same care into their employees, communities, and natural resources as they have into producing world-class wines.
Sustainability is the root of their vision of good land, water, and energy management. Jackson Family Wines was honored for their commitment to renewable energy with the 2016 Green Power Leadership Award by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Jackson Family Wines is also dedicated to being good community partners. Last year, they implemented Rooted for Good, a Jackson Family Wines volunteer program that gives their employees time to volunteer at local nonprofits. Learn more at JacksonFamilyWines.com.
This is Lawrence Amaturo, owner of News Talk KSRO, with good news from our community. From the upside, here's Steve Jackson.
In a time of so much violence here and abroad, it's encouraging and gratifying to know that we're doing something to make the world safer. Through Community Matters programs and services, more young people every day are speaking up and intervening when they encounter their peers bullying, cyberbullying, or harassing others. Community Matters is locally based in Sonoma County, and founder Rick Phillips is working hard to empower more young people in and out of schools to create a social revolution where it's no longer cool to be cruel. KSRO and the Amaturo Sonoma Media Group wants to acknowledge the great work done by Sonoma's Community Matters and thank founder Rick Phillips for creating a safe place for kids.
Since 1982, Jackson Family Wines has put the same care into their employees, communities, and natural resources as they have into producing world-class wines.
Sustainability is the root of their vision of good land, water, and energy management. Jackson Family Wines was honored for their commitment to renewable energy with the 2016 Green Power Leadership Award by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Jackson Family Wines is also dedicated to being good community partners. Last year, they implemented Rooted for Good, a Jackson Family Wines volunteer program that gives their employees time to volunteer at local nonprofits. Learn more at JacksonFamilyWines.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Sunny skies today at 67 degrees, 64 on the coast. Clear skies tonight, low 46 inland and on the shores. It's partly cloudy for Sunday at 65 degrees, 62 in Bodega Bay. Monday, mostly sunny skies at 60, 57 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRL kitchen. I know all of you have been waiting breathlessly to find out what is in this new book, Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food by Ali Buzari. So would you please do this in the honor of unveiling these eight characters who star in your book?
Yeah, they're not things you've not heard of. It's water, sugars, carbs, lipids, which is just fats and oils and anything greasy, proteins, mm-hmm. minerals, gases, and heat. And I mean, that's it.
So can we begin just a quick comment about mm-hmm. the last one, mm-hmm. heat? You don't think of it as an ingredient, mm-hmm. but you've included it.
It's not a physical thing. Yeah. Everything else is a physical thing. It was a way. I mean, it's sort of like a organizational tool mm-hmm. of saying, you know, this is another building block, and it does affect everything in similar ways. Before we went to the break, you were mentioning that these are characters in the story. Each of them does have, honestly and truly, a personality, and that was the sense that I was conveying from the original pitch to publishers was. When I look at a cappuccino or I look at a really, really good piece of barbecue brisket, there are moments in my mind where I'm like, man, that's such a protein thing to do. and it makes all of this stuff a lot easier of just feeling it rather than thinking it. And so at the beginning of the book, I present water as this stage on which everything happens. Mm-hmm. It's the theater. It's where all the other ingredients perform. If that's the case, the way I've rationalized heat is the conductor. Heat has this baton and it sets the tempo.
The director, I think.
Yeah, it's the director. Mm. It sets the tempo. It calls the shots in terms of how things move. But that's it. And everything in the food world, we're so into all of the differences of talking about all the different sauces and all the different types of dough that you can have everywhere, and even different beverages, and making these drastic distinctions between even something like wine and sake. It's all based on these really, really simple mm-hmm. fundamental moving parts. And when you look at those moving parts, it makes the universe, it's like the end of the Matrix. You see like all of the connections between everything, and everything makes sense. And it's not trying to replace everything by, you know, I don't go to a taco truck and I say, ooh, I'm so excited to have a bunch of proteins and carbs and lipids in the proper configuration. It's you can see one and the other. When you're playing music, you understand notes, but you're hearing the song.
Well, the water, which was the first chapter, mm-hmm. it was one of those things. Many of these things we know, mm-hmm. or if we don't know them consciously, we know them unconsciously. But about water's activity, mm-hmm. and you did such a marvelous job. It's like, so what does water contribute here, mm-hmm. and what is it? And that whole lot, the whole discussion of acid versus alkaline mm-hmm. and all of that. Can you? I mean, that's a great. Can you talk just a little bit about that? I know it's.
Yeah, I think on your first point, in terms of people already knowing this stuff, like I've said a bunch of times, I want this to overlay on people's pre-existing intuition mm-hmm. seamlessly. I don't want this to feel cumbersome. I don't want you to feel like you have this thing that's fogging your mind while you're trying to not burn yourself. And it, in a lot of ways, it's 270-something pages of, yes, you're right, of just telling people that they're right, and here's how. And it's crazy. I mean, I've worked with, you know, top tier 3 Michelin star chefs who have a brilliant idea. They say, hey, I want to turn, Chinese XO sauce. I want to make a sausage out of all of the things that go into that. Here's the step-by-step way I would go about doing that. And here's how I would age it. And here's how I would present it to the diner. Help me do that. And I would say, well, you just told me exactly how the perfect way to do that. And all of that is right. And here's why. And here's the levers that you're pulling without knowing it. And that's usually all they needed to go through. So yes, a lot of it is just, you already know these things intuitively. Mm. Here's a little bit more, a finer point on it.
But you put them together. It's like the water chapter mm-hmm. is a mm-hmm. great example of, well, here are all the ways in which water affects what we do in the cooking thing, including it helps things to grow, sometimes things to grow, which you may not want to grow.
Yeah, microbes. I mean, the entire wine country is just managing microbes and how they interact with water.
Yeah.
Well, you pointed out that it exists in solid and liquid, in a steam, a gas. It flows, it's acidic, which I never thought of water actually being acidic and the pH of water, but of course that's important. And I love this line. You truly write with a poetic soul. You wrote, dissolving is a two-way street. Water holds the ingredient captive, and the ingredient holds water undivided attention. I just thought that was exquisite. Well, thank you for writing that line.
Well, thanks for reading it. Thinking it was, it was good. That's a great one. That's one of my favorite concepts, because that idea of just stuff dissolving in water and then holding water captive, man, that can explain so many different things. That explains everything from why everybody brined their turkey over this past Thanksgiving to why like raspberry preserves are preserved to why cupcakes are tender. Honestly, all of that is just wrapped up in this one principle. You understand this one thing, and it spiders out, and you can do so many different amazing, delicious things with it.
The second character is sugar. Did you have any thoughts about sugar, John, that you wanted to bring up?
Well, so one of the things you have in there is a little discussion of, which I always have to laugh when I watch the Food Network, and this discussion about caramelization versus the Maillard reaction.
And you explained it very simply.
Yeah.
Would you do it? Explain it to us.
Caramelization is just sugars. Maillard reaction is sugars plus proteins.
Beautifully said. So meat experiences the Maillard reaction.
Carrots experience the Maillard reaction. Caramelized onions aren't a thing. It's Maillard onions. I have no problem with it. I'm not like trying to go on a crusade and, and take caramelization off of every menu. That was honestly just like a little point that the scientific community is going to come after me with pitchforks for a lot of liberties that I took and not going as serious and precise as the tradition is dictates. But that was one where it was easy enough to just clarify that on my way to a bigger point. Sugars is a fun one, though, because, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, living in the Bay Area, sugars are our new demon of the month. I mean, it's like in the 90s when we were so obsessed with trying to get fat out of food that we were eating Alestra potato chips on purpose. right now, you know, we're so terrified of sugar. Sugar has become this Freddy Krueger thing. One of the things that I actually wrote a piece for Eater, it was called In Defense of Sugar. It was basically saying, yeah, listen, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not here to tell you in any way how you should eat. I'm just telling you that without sugar, there is no avocado toast.
Because
sugar does more than just sweeten Coca-Cola. Sugar, and I've made a really, really horrendous analogy that I'm going to make again. Sugar is the Matthew McConaughey of the capital I eight ingredients. Where, like, for years, we just thought he was all, like, shirtless, all right, all right, all right. And then he started winning Oscars and had all this, like, crazy depth and all these things. Sugar can do a lot more than just sweet.
I always had problems with my cart making caramel because of the sugar crystals that would form along the edge of the bowl. And you wrote, quote, avoid gratuitous stirring to keep crystals from forming. I love that. I'll never, ever stir gratuitously again.
Well, thank you.
The next character is...
Can I add one more that I really loved? The book is full of... Because you're kind of... Well, irreverent isn't...
And playful.
You're playful. That's the much better word. But you describe, you know, the whole idea of the browning, which sugar plays an important part in, is kind of the supernova of... cooking.
Stuff blows up and the pieces are tasty.
Yeah.
The next chapter, I quote, carbs are probably the most boring ingredient, but here we are. It's an important chapter.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? It's essential, but it's boring.
Carbs are mostly scaffolding. As a general rule, the smaller something is, the more little tasty, smelly bits and pieces your senses have to hang on to. Carbs like starch and pectin, and even like the xanthan gum in your gluten-free bread, they're big. They are almost literally scaffolding. They're like rebar and 2x4s. They make things gel. They make things thick. They make things hold together. They bind up taste and aroma, which is why, you know, you stir a bunch of cornstarch into your gravy, and all of a sudden the nuances of the bay leaves and the thyme from the stock start to get muted. The where carbs come alive is kind of interesting. It's when you actually put them through a wood chipper and they get turned back into sugars, because they're just strings of sugars. And so many processes that we have are that when you malt barley to make beer, you're chopping up starch with a bunch of molecular knives to make it more like sugar. And sugar is dynamic and colorful and interesting. So
before we take our break, just touch on lipids. I loved the lipids chapter myself.
Great. Lipids are another... They're fats and oils, and the lipids chapter is actually illustrated with oil paint, which is just being drunk with power.
Say that again, because I missed that when I read the book.
Yeah, every chapter is illustrated with a medium that corresponds to that thing. So the water chapter is in watercolor, the lipids chapter is oil paint, the heat chapter is digital, because heat isn't a physical thing, man.
I don't know other author that would have even thought about.
Well, I can't draw. So this was as much Jeff Dallaire, who's this amazing comic book artist that I got to collaborate with on it. But
lipids. I've got to take my Lipitor. It's a bad. No one thinks of it culinarily.
Lipids are sugar from the 90s, right? That's the thing that we thought. Oh, it's only in fettuccine alfredo to make it creamy, and we thought it was only in cream cheese to make it creamy, which is why old school food scientists made fat free cream cheese and only paid attention to the texture. And they forgot the fact that lipids really, really help us cook with high heat. Lipids help store aroma. And so when you take lipids out of cream cheese and you replace those lipids with a bunch of carrageenan and xanthan gum and all the carbs to try to replicate the thickness, what you miss is you create a bunch of homeless refugee aromas that have nowhere to go, so they don't stay in the cream cheese, and it tastes like this table. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, your comment about fishiness, you know, cooking fish, which I thought was a great, I mean, we all know that if you cook the fish too much, your house smells like fish.
Yeah. Or you cook your donuts too much and they start to smell like fish.
Yeah. Right.
We'll take a break at that interesting comment. Ali Bouzari is our guest today. Bouzari. His new book is called Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. We'll touch on the rest of the characters that star in this new book when we return.
The Kim Komando Show, Sundays, noon to 3 on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Sonoma County is the place to be if you want to start or grow a business. The Sonoma County Economic Development Board has named 2016 the Year of the Entrepreneur to highlight their confidential, no-cost services. If you're looking to start, relocate, or grow a business in Sonoma County, the Economic Development Board has a new website to outline services available to you. SonomaEDB.org has the information you need to navigate the startup process or take your business to the next level. With many business development resources, the website provides links to tools, economic data, workshops, and events. It can help you connect with mentors, funding, and other entrepreneurs. The place to start is SonomaEDB.org. The Sonoma County Economic Development Board celebrating the Year of the Entrepreneur. Here to help you start, relocate, or grow your business in Sonoma County.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market won the Best Sonoma County Farmers Market Award by the Press Democrats Reader's Choice. To find out why, shop the market for your holiday feasts. Enjoy selections of fresh and organic greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet the local ranchers who offer a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork to quail and rabbit. Choose fresh fish and crab from a variety of seafood vendors and sample local dairy products. Everything you need to create the freshest holiday dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Earnings vary based on your effort.
Do you want to learn how to make money flipping houses right here in the North Bay Area? If so, we have an amazing opportunity for you. We're looking for a small group of motivated individuals to join our real estate investing team. You'll learn our simple three-step system for flipping homes right here in the local area. This is Than Merrill, star of A&E's hit TV show Flip This House. My team and I are looking for a handful of people in the North Bay Area who want to learn how to make money flipping houses in your spare time using other people's money. The North Bay Area is a perfect market for my system, and next week I'm holding a free 2-hour educational workshop where you will learn how to make money flipping homes and how to build long-term wealth with income properties.
To get 2 free tickets to Than's workshop, call 1-800-385-3165. Seating is extremely limited. Call in the next 10 minutes and you'll also reserve a free copy of Than's Money for Deals guide. That's 1-800-385-3165. That's 1-800-385-3165.
Well, want to make sure that we at least touch on the remaining characters in Ali Buzari's new book called Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food. We've never seen a book quite like it, and I applaud you for taking such a risk to write such an extraordinary book.
Well, I applaud you for that impeccable soprano sax that you have on the bumper music.
We've made it through lipids. My favorite chapter. We're on to proteins, which, gee whiz, that's the big football player out there in the field, isn't it?
Protein's another one where words get us in a pickle, because in restaurants, you know, as chefs, we call meat protein, which is a real confusing thing, because there's proteins in celery, you know?
But no one ever thinks about that. I never think of...
Until now.
Do you think of protein? Like, oh, I get all my protein because I eat celery every day.
We always think of the animal.
But it must be an infinitesimal amount of protein.
Infinitesimal, but that is enough to kickstart like why celery will still brown if you sear it. And that's the thing is, like, there's so much of this. People are tied up in nutrition and like, how is there protein in an orange? Well, the proteins in the orange, you know, maybe there are the enzymes that are helping make that aroma of the orange that you smell. Maybe it's the proteins in an apple, also enzymes that are making the apple turn brown when you cut it. And there's this idea, all eight ingredients are probably going to be in every piece of food that you ever come into contact with. There are eight levers that are always on the mixing board. So you always need to be able to EQ one or the other. And it's a really great power.
So the enzymes thing was especially interesting to me because I confess I really didn't know except, there are enzymes in that thing that's fermenting over there or something like that, without any clearer understanding of what was happening. Can you give a brief description? And then you describe them as builders or breakers.
Yeah. Most, I would say 90% of proteins in our food are very similar to the way carbs behave. They're another like big long chain of stuff. They're scaffolding. They hold your Jell-O together. They make your glutinous pancake set when you cook it. There's a small subset of proteins that fold up into little tiny like origami shapes, and they almost literally come alive. They're tiny little protein mini machines that either build stuff up or break stuff down. So when you pick fresh peas, the reason that like English peas that are sitting in a basket at a grocery store for 3 weeks taste starchy and just like complete crap. That's because there's enzymes that have been knitting together sugars into carbs, and you're losing sweetness. The other side is when you take a sweet potato and you slow roast it, and it somehow magically becomes even sweeter, it's because you've woken up enzymes that will do the opposite. Oh. They'll chop whole carbs up into sugars. Or there's enzymes in goat's milk that chop up lipids into little bits of smelly bits, which is why goat cheeses smell that very particular way. And why really, really smart cheesemakers who are trying to make like a feta-style cheese with cow's milk, they'll actually add that enzyme separately so you get those same smell cues.
So enzymes, very important part of the protein chapter.
Absolutely.
Never thought about enzymes before. Then the minerals chapter. They're the rocks.
Yeah, we eat rocks. They're very, very small quantities. The famous one is, you know, salt, sodium chloride.
Yeah.
But there's tons of other stuff. There's calcium and magnesium and copper. And iron, and they affect everything from the way our food tastes to the way it holds together. And there's another like single principle that spiderwebs out in really impressive ways, which is minerals have the ability to bind those two scaffolding ingredients, carbs and proteins, bind them together. So that binding is the fundamental lever that you pull to make everything from tofu and canned tomatoes work and hold their shape. Or if you want to flip it the other way, that's why New Yorkers say their bagels are better than everybody else's and how Velveeta and fondue work.
Well, explain how something tastes minerally. We all know salty, but you said, no, minerals have flavor.
Yeah. So it's crazy. There's two ways. Either something like iron or calcium or magnesium will actually interact with your tongue. Taste sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami. That's all your tongue can tell you. The rest of it, when people say that like gamey meat smells gamey or it's something tastes like blood or something tastes like the ocean, that's actually all smell. And that's minerals in your saliva or minerals in the food, iron and magnesium and stuff, interacting with lipids that are sitting in your saliva. That when the lipids are whole, they're just oil. They don't smell like anything. But when those minerals come in, they actually react and they cause the lipids to break apart and they send bloody smells up into your nose.
Just astounding how important they are in fixing color.
Every green vegetable that you're ever going to cook, the greenness comes from something that basically looks like a solar panel. The green pigment is this molecule that's arranged to interact with light, and it makes us see green. The thing that's anchoring that and holding it into place is magnesium. And when you mess with magnesium, that's when things turn drab gray or brown and all sorts of things. Same thing with meat. It's iron at the center of that solar panel that's changing when meat gets overcooked or when it's in those really, really beautiful butcher cases where they're like almost unnaturally red. Mm. They gas it with oxygen to make the iron as happy as possible.
Gases are next, speaking of a gas. Mm-hmm. Talk about gases for a bit.
Gases are, that can be everything from when water evaporates and your popcorn pops to the thick, frothy, white foam on top of a Guinness to your avocado turning brown because you've let oxygen get in there like an assassin and do weird stuff to it.
I love that you wrote it was the flightiest ingredient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't think of ingredients being flighty. And that you had to herd.
Herding
cattle. Yeah. Herding the gases.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you leave salt in a broth. That salt is bulletproof. Nothing is ever going to happen to it unless it gets absorbed by food. That's pretty much the only way it goes anywhere. Gases will do the wrong thing if you look at them sideways.
And that's where the foam chapter was in there also.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that, so there was one little tip in there, which I thought was great, and that was for frying batter. Mm-hmm. If you add a little alcohol to the batter, it creates when it hits the hot fat.
Yeah, that was the thing. You know, people have been adding vodka to like different batters for frying stuff for ages. I actually talked to somebody who was talking about this inflated Chinese pastry that they wanted to make. It's like a gougère, but it's like a little bit more lacy. And I said, why don't you just do the alcohol thing? You know, it evaporates easier, so it puffs things out more quickly. And he's like, but that only works for batters, right? This is a dough. And I didn't say anything. I just like let that statement hang out. And in our own internal monologues of being told that all of this stuff is segregated and all these things are siloed and codified, that may make sense. But then when you say that out loud, you're like, wait, how on earth would that not also work for something that I'm just calling a dough?
The other chapter, we're just about at the end, heat, which, Sean, you spoke about earlier, which doesn't really, isn't an ingredient, but it was important to include in the book.
Yeah, heat's a little bit easier. All of the other capital I ingredients do maybe four to six little tricks. Heat only has two things.
What does it do?
Make stuff move faster, make stuff vibrate. So the move faster is a lot to do with texture. So when you have really nice beef carpaccio at a restaurant, the way that that is accomplished is slicing beef very thinly on a meat slicer. And they do that with beef that is almost frozen solid. So that if you're trying to slice something very, very thin, I mean, we can all envision how it makes sense to try to get that single layer of stuff to just hold still while you're cutting. I mean, that applies to everything from ice cream cake to cheese. Mm. If you're trying to slice anything thinly, you're trying to keep things from moving. If you're trying to scoop ice cream, that's a great one. Perfect. I love watching pastry chefs during service in a restaurant because they do this amazing ballet of taking the ice cream container and putting it in different parts of the freezer and like putting it by the stove and trying to find this perfect balance where things are moving around just enough that, the ice cream will follow the scoop and make this beautiful shape, but not so much that it obviously melts before it gets to you.
So, and finally, how do we get this information into our brain? What's the easiest way to approach the book?
Read it cover to cover.
Okay.
Honestly, there's so many. I mean, there's Harold McGee's book is the greatest, most perfect book written on this subject. There's Modernist Cuisine out there. There's so many great. Kenji Lopez's book, Food Lab, is insane. All of those books, in a lot of ways, are meant to be set up as homework. They are. You're getting ready to cook an artichoke, you'll go look up an artichoke. Or something goes wrong with your crepes, you go look up what could have gone wrong with your crepes. This is not meant to be that. This is meant to be a language, and it's meant to be instinctual. So read it cover to cover and treat it as just like, you know, you're buckling on a tool belt. And when I say read it cover to cover, it's really hard to read Harold McGee's book cover to cover. You should. I told all of my students at CIA for 4 years to do that. But it's really, really hard, and it's maybe not meant to be. This is maybe 70 pages of text.
Yeah.
Spaced in a very BuzzFeed-esque way, so they're super digestible. And go through it, but it's not meant to be something you refer back to.
Your favorite number today between 1 and 15, what would it be?
5.
Caller number 5 at 636-1350 will win this autographed copy of Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food by Ali Buzari. caller number five. It was a delight to meet
Likewise.
You. And to have you as our neighbor is very exciting that you live in Sonoma County.
Yeah, I'm around.
This is really good.
We want to come up and watch you work.
Okay, deal.
In your lab.
This would be very, very exciting.
We'll pick a time.
Coming up next week, a gentleman named Kyle Connaughton will be sitting in your place.
I'm familiar with him.
And Kyle from Single Thread will find out the launch of the longest anticipated restaurant in Sonoma County's history.
Ask him about celery.
I will ask him about celery next Saturday. Thank you, John Ash.
Yeah, good to see you.
Clark Wolf at the table coming up next.
At the table with Clark Wolf. Saturdays noon to 1 on 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO.
The holidays are here, and there's no better place to help you create the perfect environment than the Gift Horse in Healdsburg. Whether it's table, kitchen, or home decor, we can inspire the decorator in you. Hi, I'm Carol, owner of the Gift Horse. I invite you to come see all the beautiful and hard-to-find items we've added this year.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
This season, the Gift Horse is beautiful, glitzy, vintage, woodsy. If that sounds like you, visit our sensational Christmas store. At the Gift Horse, we have everything you need for entertaining and gift-giving in true holiday spirit.
From our door to your door.
We're next to Garaday's Hardware in Healdsburg.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
The Gift Horse Home Store.
Home decor and more.
Open every day 9 to 6.
News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5.